having closed himself off again to everyone, but not in a way that feels like, ah, there goes Wolverine, he's a loner again. Like, it's entirely justified after everything we've seen him go through. But instead of being like that, big emotional thing that makes him shut down again at the end, like we really get to see him become a human being again.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Cinemation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Thomas Horton.
And we're alone tonight.
Okay.
Talking about... talking about... Well, first off, Thomas, what have you watched recently? We'll just go to that first.
Let's see. What have I been watching recently? Has somebody already talked... I haven't been on in a couple weeks. Has somebody already talked about Riverdale? I know Anna's into Riverdale, but
no,
she hasn't...
Well, she hasn't been on, so she hasn't been on. About it.
Yeah. Anna and a friend at my internship both made me. I watched the pilot of Riverdale just because I was a big Archie fan. For anyone who doesn't know, Riverdale is the CW's sexy noir
David Lynch version
reboot of Archie, the Archie comics. And I grew up reading my dad's comic books, like just a stack, like not even a lot. My dad just gave me like a stack of comic books. And before, like, I even knew that a comic book store was a thing, I just read this stack of my dad's comic books, and I would get to the bottom of it, and I'd go back to the top and start over again. And some of the comic books that were in there were Archie's, and I started reading those. And, like, Josie and the Pussycats used to come on Cartoon Network in the mornings, and I liked that show. It was like Scooby-Doo, but they played music. And so, like, yeah, I like Archie a lot, and I think Archie is a major part of American culture. And now it's like dark and sexy on Riverdale. But yeah, I watched the pilot and I was just like, I don't know if I can handle this. This is too weird. like Jughead, who was Archie's version of like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, is now this like lone wolf reporter guy who's like a novelist and is like the narrator of the show. And Archie is like super into music, which if you know pop culture, you know that Archie was a songwriter because he wrote the hit song Sugar, You're My Candy Girl. But now he's like a super serious musician, and he's having an affair with Miss Grundy, who is like 80 in the comic books, but they, of course, she's sexy now. Everyone's sexy in the show. They're 15, but Archie has the muscle tone of like a 25-year-old. But yeah, I watched the pilot and I was like, oh, this is crazy. I can't, this is just CW, like taking something and making it stupid. And Anna and then a guy at my internship were like, no, it's all like they keep making all these Twin Peaks references, and it's really tongue in cheek. Like they know exactly what they're doing. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll give it another shot. And it's addicting. I still think it's still pretty dumb. Like my roommate and I watch it and make jokes about it the whole time. But they're definitely, it's definitely being made with like a loving nod to Archie. Whoever's making it definitely knows what's happening in the Archie comic books because they can play with it. So they can twist it up so well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a trip. It's definitely worth checking out for anybody who knows anything about Archie, which I feel like most people at least know, the basic like love triangle, Archie, Betty, Veronica type thing. But yeah, that's what I've been watching.
And it just got renewed for season two.
Yep, today, season two. And supposedly, the actor who plays Archie let it slip a little while back at like a Comic-Con convention that Sabrina the Teenage Witch was going to be coming because she started in the Archie comic books. So he let it slip that Sabrina was going to be showing up by the end of season one. So as of right now, there's no magic in Riverdale, but there's a possibility that it could get really weird.
So should I watch it? That's the big question I have.
I think if you're not bringing like a background of Archie to it.
Yeah, which I'm not.
And you're also not bringing like a teen drama interest to it, I don't know that it's gonna have a lot to offer you. For me, it's the Archie stuff is bridging the gap to teen drama. I'm sure what the CW is hoping is that the teen drama stuff will bridge the gap to the Archie stuff, But yeah, if you're not in that, if you're, like the guy at my internship who watches it, like loves Archie, loves David Lynch, and loves teen soap operas, and so this is just like his new favorite show. He's obsessed with it. So you know, if you're not hitting one of those 3 points, I don't know that it's going to appeal to you. But
I'll try the pilot. I'll try the pilot.
okay.
Because I do, and I'm looking at all the titles, and all the titles are movie titles.
Yeah, they're all the titles are noir, like mostly noir films, and they these kid that's part of the Lynchianness of it, is all these like 15-year-olds know all about old school noirs, and they keep making like one of my favorite quotes from the first episode is like Veronica Lodge has just moved into town, and you know she's the rich, alluring brunette to Betty's like all-American innocent blonde. And Veronica's like first one of her first lines when she shows up, she's like always wearing like a black dress and pearls, and she goes, "I'm normally breakfast at Tiffany's, but this town is strictly in cold blood." And I was like, "How much Truman Capote has this 15-year-old been reading?"
Maybe she's read none of it, but just knows like the
Knows the
basic
references.
stuff,
Yeah,
the
and
references.
they make like 4 references in the pilot to like Mad Men, and I'm like, you got to keep in mind these people are 15. Mad Men went off the air like 4 years ago, so they were like 11 when Mad Men was finishing up. How many of these 15-year-olds really know how to make all these Mad Men references?
They've just been binge watching it on Netflix
Yeah,
like ever
I guess
since
so.
they're
I guess it's hot with all the 15-year-olds these days.
when they turned 13, they got a Netflix subscription from their parents for their birthday, and they just started watching Mad
This
Men
went straight
over
to Mad Men, yep.
and so the thing, I've been watching a lot of movies. The I'll talk about the one that I watched in theaters recently that's not the topic of our discussion tonight, but was Get Out, which was amazing. And I know you've seen it twice, correct? It was great. Jordan Peele's first, his directorial debut, and I had heard from a few friends that had told me early on they didn't like it because they saw early versions of it or whatever, and so I went in with like kind of low expectations, even though critics like really loved it, and I was like, well, I don't want to go in too high with like it's gonna be amazing, and I go see it like one afternoon just because I had time, and it was great. Like I loved it. I usually don't go see horror films in theaters. So this one really got me into it because I love Jordan Peele stuff with Key and Peele, and I know sometimes people think comedians can't go outside the comedy box, and usually the comedians are the best at doing that. And I think Jordan Peele kills it with this horror, mostly horror, a little bit of comedy, and it's this great social commentary on a number of things. And I don't want to reveal too much about it if you haven't seen it, because it's almost great going in blind with that type of movie.
But yeah, I saw it again this past weekend after a screening the like a week and a half earlier, and it's just expertly crafted. It really is. It's well worth a revisit. And I do think you're talking about not seeing horrors in theaters. I definitely think it's the type of film to see to bridge the gap between people who don't like horror and seeing a horror film. It's got such a distinctive message, and it really doesn't re it's a lot of the horror is based around tone, and it's pretty it's pretty controlled. It's pretty subtle in its actual like out and out horror. It really stuck out to me as I was writing on Medium. I published a review of the Belko Experiment, which is James Gunn's new film. And those I saw those both this past weekend, and those are two completely different experiences in horror movies. I think Get Out is crafted with some a lot of nods to fans of the horror genre, but with a lot of technique that opens it up to everyone. Whereas Belko is entirely a tribute to horror fans, and I would not recommend it seeing it to anyone who is not absolutely love. Like B movie gore horror movies.
Yeah, that's the thing with Get Out, that it really did, to me at least, it didn't have a lot of gore until a certain moment in the film.
And even then,
Like,
it's pretty. It continues to be pretty tasteful, I think.
And it's just, I mean, great performances. I mean, it's making so much money right now.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Blumhouse is which also is distributing Belko Experiment. Blumhouse
are they really?
Is as well under they have a division that's for like less horror, because honestly, yeah. Belko is more of like a thriller than a horror.
Yeah.
But it's called BH Tilt, and it's a deal with Universal that they distribute some of Universal's more genre stuff.
Yeah.
Blumhouse is printing money right now.
And they just did Split as well, which was about a month ago, the Shyamalan mm-hmm. movie, which I haven't seen, but I heard mixed things about it, but like it had legs throughout its entire run. It's still running in a lot of places. But I heard, I don't know how true this is, but someone told me how Blumhouse, they kind of know what's going to play before they release it. Mm-hmm. Like if it's not testing well, they just don't release it in theaters. They just,
that's interesting.
They find a different way to distribute it. They don't do the whole like as big as Get Out or even Split. So like they, I don't know how true it is, but they have some sort of system to determine what will do well and what won't do well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd believe it, and I certainly think they have great taste. I mean, even before doing stuff like Get Out, which is on an entirely different level than most horror films. I mean, they early in the early years, Jason Blum was doing work with James Wan, which I think James Wan had a very different approach to horror, which is he has a lot of respect towards storytelling and character. That the Saw generation kind of lost, and I think yeah. what Jason Blum saw, and I don't want to get too deep into, we can do a whole horror episode, but I think what Jason Blum saw is audiences starting to move back away from that torture porn genre that dominated horror for so long, and he and James mm-hmm. Wan pounced on it, and now he's created a niche for himself of pretty reliably effective and well-written independent small horror films.
Yeah, I mean, because we had Katie on the show, and Paranormal Activity was kind of his first big
mm-hmm.
movie that he did, and ever since, I'm looking at like the budgets for most of these movies, and the very few go over $10 million.
Yeah,
actually only one of them does. Like everything is underneath that. The only one, which I didn't know they did, that went over 10 million was Tooth Fairy with The Rock, which Jason Blum apparently produced with Blumhouse.
Yeah, apparently. I bet that was before he figured out what he wanted to do.
Yeah, but see, after that, like everything's around the $1 million to $5 million range, and then a couple $10 million here. And they also did Whiplash. Like, they didn't just do horror films. Like, they have a good track record outside that. But they're just like, when you look at the comparison, if you go to their like Wikipedia page, they have like the filmography, and you just look at how much they spent to how much they made, it's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're looking at trying to think if I find a good one. I mean, Split, it cost $9 million to make, and worldwide it's made almost $240 million. Like, that's insane. And most of their movies are making a large amount of profit. So Get Out was the thing I watched. If you haven't seen it, go see it. And it's one of those movies, like you said, that it will, I feel like you'll bring in a much larger audience than certain horror movies will.
Yeah.
Because it has a lot of different stuff going for it. Even though it is a straight horror, it has the comedy elements, it has a social commentary, and it has, like, I mean, after its second weekend, it like only dropped like 20% from its first weekend. Like mm-hmm. it's doing consistently well.
Yeah, it's going to be a word of mouth film for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because all you have Logan that just came out, and you have Kong that just came out as we release this episode. So like it's going to have a good audience, I think, for probably the next month or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. But tonight's episode that we want to talk about, it'll go into a lot of things, but Thomas and I also just recently saw Logan. So Thomas is kind of our go-to Marvel guy, except Deadpool when we missed it a year ago with him. So this is hopefully making up for that. I don't know if it ever will. So Thomas, what were your initial thoughts on Logan?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it was a extremely well-crafted script for any kind of film. It would be, I think that's also a testament to a superhero film, is if you could take out the comic book relationship and it would still work, which I think this one does, which is also why I always defend Iron Man 3 when people, when people start talking trash about it. But yeah, it's based off of a Western format, which draws heavily from the movie Shane, which I love. And I was honestly a big fan of James Mangold's last Wolverine film, The Wolverine.
Yeah,
which was kind of it had its faults. It feels like the first, like, two acts are excellent in that it's we're finally seeing... I love the first act especially, in that we've been watching Wolverine and all these X-Men movies. And to be honest, like, I love the first two X-Men movies, but there's not a whole lot of substance there. Like, they get into, like, the humans versus mutants stuff, and, like, the Holocaust metaphor is hammered home many times. But you're watching, especially Wolverine... In the original X-Men run, he's so concerned with, like, finding out about his past that they don't put a whole lot of time into, like, how all of this is affecting him, which is why I loved The Wolverine picked up after X-Men The Last Stand. And no matter how bad The Last Stand was, there were some major, you know, things that he had to deal with emotionally. And that's what The Wolverine gave us, was, you know, how does he deal with losing so many of his friends, with killing the woman that he loves, and then it all kind of fell apart in the third act, because I think you could kind of feel the studio going, like, okay, let's get our big fight against a CGI generated robot, and you all kind of lost it there, but there was, like, a peak of greatness in there. And that's why I was so excited to hear that Mangold was coming back for this one. And then when they were getting an R rating, it was like, okay, I think they're really going to give him the chance to, like, really explore what's going on in the mind of Wolverine. And then when they said it was kind of loosely based on Old Man Logan, I knew that was going to be good, because that's what a lot of Old Man Logan is centered around.
Yeah.
I was really excited going in for it, and it did not disappoint.
Yeah, I agree. I love that, because I agree with the comparison to the Western genre, because, like, that's what I felt the entire time when watching it. I think you even commented that the score even had this, like, Western.
Yeah. Got some solid, like, Morricone, like, trumpets and stuff going on in there.
Yeah, and even, like, because I talked about, I mean, we'll get into spoilers here, so if you haven't watched the movie, don't listen to the episode, turn it off now. But, like, the ending of it, I kept thinking, like, it felt like The Cowboys, which is a John Wayne movie that happened, like, I think it was released in the 60s or so. And what was important about John Wayne with The Cowboys, and it's the only reason kind of to see it, is, like, John Wayne gets killed in, like, a one-on-one fight, which, like, never, ever happened in movies. And he's, like, training these kids to, I think, to be, like, herd cattle and all this, and he gets killed by Bruce Dern. And the entire third act of it is basically the kids going against Bruce Dern and, like, becoming men, essentially. And I felt that is exactly what they were doing with Wolverine at the end, or at Logan with the end, when, like, he gets killed and all the kids go off and have to start a whole new life of himself, which is basically what the rumor is, the New Mutants movie. There was a lot of Western stuff in it, and I think it was the most Western superhero movie besides Jonah Hex, which I haven't seen. I think they were able, when they got the R rating, they were able to go a lot of different places with they weren't able to go with in the Wolverine or X-Men Origins. I heard the reason why was because there was, like, change at Fox, and, like, the top people, something changed, and they were more open to basically letting them do, like, what they wanted to do. And I think Jackman, I just heard in an interview, he talked about how he wanted Logan to be his last one, and he basically got some of the Fox people together, took them to, like, his hotel in LA, and was like, hey, this is what I want to do. I want all this to happen. This is the last one, and we need, like, to have, like, a little leeway with it, not just about like kind of what you're saying with the Wolverine, not just do that great two acts and then that third act becomes the superhero movie essentially.
And when somebody is that iconically tied to a character and to a franchise, like you don't say no at that point.
No. And what's so great is that with him, with Jackman, he went from like people doubting him before the first movie came out with X-Men of like, he's not right. He's, I think, was too tall. He can't play Wolverine. We don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And then after all that kind of pushback from fans after the first one, they started to love him and he stuck with them throughout. And I think, mm-hmm. I mean, 17 years is a long time for any person to do any role. I mean, in comparison, like, if you look at, like, the Harry Potter franchise, I think they were, like, doing it for 11 years. But, like, he's done it for 17 years in a variety of different roles. He didn't forget where he came from because it helped him, like, jumpstart his movie career.
Mm-hmm.
After the meeting, he said he, like, called James Mangold out and told him what he wanted to do. And he was just like, what do you think? And he's just like, hell yes, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And like, that's all he needed from the director.
Yeah. And I mean, and James Mangold was an excellent having, not yeah. only having already done the Wolverine, he also did 310 to Yuma, which is one of exactly. The best,
yeah.
you know, recent, Westerns yeah. made. So, he was definitely an excellent choice for
it. He's done a lot of other great stuff as well. He did Walk the Line, Girl Interrupted. He did Copland, which is actually a really good movie. And one thing he's credited for that I did not know until just now, he is one of the writers on Oliver and Company.
I did not know that either. All right. Good for him. Big fan.
Which is Thomas's most... Is it your favorite Disney film or just most underrated?
Most underrated Disney film. Okay. I don't know about favorite, but it's up there. It's way up there.
So I have a few questions about this since you're the mm-hmm. Marvel expert. Where do you think, where do you think this with Logan, do you see more rated, because it's a previous question, more rated R comic book movies now coming out after the success of Logan?
Oh yeah, I think it's something that Fox will latch onto for sure. I mean, they pretty much have to with Deadpool going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. But I think they're going to, now that Wolverine's done, Deadpool is without a doubt their most iconic character. So uh-huh. I think as they're trying to reboot, I keep wanting to say like reboot the X-Men, but the X-Men are like constantly rebooting. But now that they're trying for this like new class of X-Men, I think they're going to probably try to tie Deadpool into it a little bit more. Get X-Force moving forward. So I think R-rated superhero films are probably going to become Fox's thing.
Yeah.
They won't all be, all the Fox properties won't all be R-rated, and I'm sure like the main X-Men movies won't be, but moving forward with like Deadpool 2, X-Force, that sort of thing will definitely be R-rated. And as far as like Disney Marvel, I think they're probably going to continue to keep that to Netflix, which I mean, Netflix doesn't give their TV shows R's, but like the Netflix Marvel series is R-rated. I mean, you only have to watch Daredevil, you know, impale somebody's head on a fence post to realize that this is not PG-13.
Or D'Onofrio, like, slamming a guy's head over and over again.
Yeah. And also just, you know, for them to make an entire series of a superhero, you know, about rape with Jessica Jones is... So, yeah, I mean, it's not like... you see a lot of people online go like, oh, man, Fox has the guts to make an R-rated superhero film and Disney doesn't. I mean, and it's like, look at Netflix. That's what Disney's doing. But I think they've struck on a great tone for their films right now in theaters, and I don't think they're gonna feel the need in the future to do any of those films R-rated. You know, most of those are family films, and they're gonna be getting even more family friendly with their upcoming like ABC Family series, and their Hulu series with The Runaways. But yeah, I definitely think this is going to, just looking at how much money this has made, and with Fox struggling to kind of elevate their Marvel franchises other than X-Men, I think like the R rating might become the new frame at which they look at their other properties that they own.
Yeah, because now it's not this like death toll when it's R rated. Like now it's like we can actually go that way, and we can show from two previous examples that like people are willing to see this.
Yeah.
There's enough in the audience for R-rated superhero films.
Yep, yep.
So besides X-Force and Deadpool 2, and this you can include Disney's Netflix stuff, what other comic book heroes do you wish had a project that was R-rated or that was on the old, like the TV mature type stuff for Netflix or whatever?
Huh. I would love a Hawkeye's adaptation from like the Matt Fraction stuff,
which is great.
Which is about Hawkeye, you know, as we know him through the Avengers, and then also Katie, who is his like apprentice, whose name is also Hawkeye.
Yeah.
That stuff I could definitely see being R. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you go shooting arrows around a lot, you know, they're gonna. It's the same thing with Wolverine. You never really realize until, you know, the first scene of Logan, you're like, oh yeah, I've just watched him spend like 8 movies attacking people with steel claws, and I've never seen anyone like bleed from it. It's like, yeah, they're gonna. He's gonna slice some arms off, and that's, you know, I think that would be the same thing with Hawkeye's. Who else would I like to see R-rated?
And that Matt, to go off that Matt Faction, like Hawkeye, kind of has a little bit of a Deadpool type tone to it.
Oh yeah,
like,
it's really sarcastic.
The comics I've read.
Yeah, they've got a great kind of chemistry between the two of them, and like shooting jokes back and forth. Because Hawkeye's a great character, and I don't dislike his portrayal in the films as much as most people do. I think I think they bring through a lot of that, but. He's got so much leading man potential in there, and I do think he's underused, but yeah, I think that could make a great series, and with a more mature rating, I think would be fine by me. I'll tell you one I don't think should ever be touched with an R rating, and that's the one thing that scares me when I just said that'll be Fox's framing to look at their new franchises. Is Fantastic Four. I think we've even said this on the podcast before, but like the general belief on, you know, amongst comic book fans is that the best Fantastic Four movie ever made is The Incredibles. And that's very true. Like the Fantastic Four is, and that's not to mean that like the Fantastic Four haven't been through mature storylines, but at their heart, it's like a family comedy. You know, it's just this family, this dysfunctional family trying to get along and do something good at the same time. And I think the last version definitely lost sight of that. The you know, Jessica Alba, Chris Evans version, I think focused on that too much.
Yeah.
Cause that just plays like a broad comedy up until the last like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So you got to find a balance, but yeah, I definitely think they need to steer clear of any type of R rating there.
Do you think with Fantastic Four, do you think they should just let that go back to Disney and Marvel, or do you think they should try to like keep it in their like catalog?
I mean, I think Disney would do a great job with it, you know, hand it over to Brad Bird, to be honest, and he could do it incredibly well. But the Fantastic Four are not people that I'm like dying to see incorporated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just because they normally try to keep themselves out of the Marvel, you know, the rest of the Marvel Universe. And most of the time in the books, when something big happens and everybody gets like motivated and they're like, ah, we're joining forces, most of the time Reed Richards is like, I don't want to get my family involved in this. So I don't think anything would be lost for them not being involved in the MCU. I think if Fox put a lot of work into it, which they've obviously done with the X-Men movies. I think they can make something good. And I think if anyone's going to function outside of the MCU, apart from the X-Men, I think Fantastic Four is the best group to do it. Maybe Inhumans, but Disney has them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Fantastic Four would be perfectly fine as long as Fox, you know, has a commitment to quality. I don't see any reason why that shouldn't work. The main thing about the Fantastic Four that's like that you really want to see done well, and the only reason I would really want the Disney Marvel to get a hold of them is Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Who's never really been handled well in a movie and is the greatest villain in Marvel history ever. And it would be cool to see because he comes with the Fantastic Four franchise, but he belongs with that. He antagonizes everybody.
He's
Iron Man right now in the comic books.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's Tony's dead. Spoiler alert. he's like kind of in a coma. He's like trapped his consciousness. His body's messed up, but he's trapped his consciousness in like a machine. But in the meantime, Dr. Doom has been like, oh, I want to do something good for the world. So he broke into Tony's lab and stole the Iron Man suit. And he's like Iron Man right now. Yeah.
The guy who played the actor who portrayed Dr. Doom in the last movie, Toby Kimball or Kibbell, I guess.
Yeah, I barely even remember him.
But he said he would only be interested in returning for the role of Dr. Doom if he joined Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
His quote was, truth is, Doom is an incredible bad guy. They just keep trying to force him into the Fantastic Four. Doom is a monster, but my Doom was not, so there's that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's dead on. Doom is incredible. I mean, Doom was literally in the last big... Well, now they just had Civil War II, but previous to Civil War II, the last like huge thing in the Marvel... comic book universe was Secret Wars, in which Doom was literally god of this alternate universe. I mean, Doom is an extremely powerful figure. He's intelligent. He's not like motivated by pure evil. There's a couple of times when they'll come up against him and the Marvel heroes are like, you know, we're gonna punch you into submission. He's like, I have crunched all the numbers. I've looked at everything logically, and like me ruling this world is the only way to save it from a certain apocalypse. And you know, there's a lot of times you can't argue with his logic. So he's I mean, he is the Marvel villain. So that would be the only reason to want him in the Disney Marvel universe. But but first they'd have to commit to, you know, getting a really good actor and writing his character as more than a one off villain.
So back to Logan, the movie. to go back to that. Do you feel it was a good ending for the character of, or the current ending for the character of Logan and Charles Xavier?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I thought it's an excellent write off for Wolverine. We get him come full circle to, you know, having closed himself off again to everyone, but not in a way that feels like, there goes Wolverine, he's a loner again. Like, it's entirely justified after everything we've seen him go through. But instead of being like that, you know, big emotional thing that makes him shut down again at the end, like we really get to see him become a human being again, which we haven't seen since, I know we all like to believe it, you know, doesn't exist, but Wolverine Origins, like, after all the Weapon X stuff and all of the you know, emotional torment he's gone through having been turned into a monster, like, I think the film brings him full circle back to being a human by the end, which is a really beautiful send-off for him. And then as for Charles, I was just really happy that we got to see Patrick Stewart in like a meatier role. I think this is definitely the meatiest role that Charles has ever had. He's normally the mentor and he normally just plays, you know, the in the hero's journey, he's just the mentor and he's perfect.
Yeah.
And this was his film where we really got to see him be flawed and be scared and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And,
his lowest points, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. And that's something we've been able to see. If we're just talking character-wise, that's something that they did really well with James McAvoy's version in Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we've really got to see Stewart play it.
Yeah.
And he does it extremely well.
I watched a video recently. I wish I knew the name of it, of what the YouTube channel was. But they put Wolverine's storyline in like in chronological order.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. I saw that. They were wrong. They had something wrong in there.
The overarching thing of it was that physically he's lived, or his body's lived like 100 and almost 200 years or whatever, and then emotionally his characters lived like almost 230 years.
Yeah, because he got sent back.
Yeah, so like if it's in that Splinter timeline essentially, and so if that happens, like you're seeing Logan at the end of his, basically at the end of his rope, like he's been living mentally for over 220 years. Like you said, he's seen all of his friends die off, and mm-hmm. he's the last one. And I don't know if people think it corny, but that's why I think his last words are really important to that character.
Spoilers now?
Yeah, I've already said that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When he says, so this is what it feels like, or mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like, that's something you've never thought about, is that he's seen all of his friends die. He's been hurt. He's been in pain for so long. He's never been on that moment of, oh, I'm dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he's heard about it and seen it. And that's the first time he's actually like lived through it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think it's really important to, because I've talked to some people who have seen this one and really enjoyed this one, but haven't seen The Wolverine.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't have to story-wise, but for his emotional arc, that, I mean, that's his goal in The Wolverine, is to die.
Yeah.
And they don't really bring that back up until the end of Logan, is that for a long time, he had either seen everyone he loved die or killed them himself.
Yeah.
And he couldn't die. And that's all he wanted after a certain point.
Yeah. And that's a very painful thing. It's like, mm-hmm. to make comparison, in The Green Mile, Tom Hanks's older version of himself, of like how he talks about how he has to see everyone die. And that's one of the most painful things, is that he knows he won't be dying for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what Logan has to go through. And you're seeing him at the very end of his run. And I think it's a great send off for Hugh Jackman. Have you read the actual graphic novel or comic book for Old Man Logan?
For Old Man Logan? Yeah. Yeah.
It's based off of.
I've read that one and the recent reboot, which is good as well.
So for the people who haven't read it like myself, what are the similarities and differences? Cause I've heard there's not many.
Oof. Yeah.
Similarities between the two. There's like a few basic things and that's it.
Yeah, I mean it's the setting is definitely drawing on inspirations. It is kind of this like Wild West. It's extremely post-apocalyptic, like more like Mad Max than Logan. And you know, it's populated by all the world, like all these areas are, it's a lot more like Mad Max, like all these areas are run by different Marvel villains, and Logan and Hawkeye, Logan has a family, and Logan and Hawkeye have to set out, in order to save his family, they have to set out to like get a certain amount of money to pay off the Hulk, who is like the crime boss in Logan's area.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a lot close, the book is a lot closer to a Marvel version of Mad Max, but it is a lot like a Western. There's a lot of style drawn from Westerns in the book, and just the whole idea of like the Mexican-Texan border, and you know, kind of like the desert, and Logan being older, obviously, and having a slower healing ability. all that's kind of factored in there, but otherwise very, very different.
So we talked about how, like, what we think of it and how good we thought it was. What do you think were some flaws to it, though? Because no movie is perfect, really.
You know, I do have to address one thing that a lot of people have said is a flaw, and I disagree with, is I've heard a lot of people say that they didn't like Boyd Holbrook's character, and felt that he was kind of, you know, like a pretty boring one-note Marvel villain. Which I mean, his the character that he's playing does have like a rich Marvel background, but you know, I mean, you can't this is a movie about Logan. Like, they weren't gonna build this whole full background for Boyd Holbrook's character, for Donald Pierce. But I thought he played it really well. I loved, especially he kind of takes a back seat in the second two acts as you know, the emotional story and Logan's relationship with this girl take precedence. But I thought in the first act, I thought he was great. I love the scene between them when he's introduced and he just climbs into Logan's limo.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed him in that. That's one complaint everyone else has that I don't have. My complaint, and this is more comic book nerdy of me, but I think they perfectly set the film up for a really interesting turn, by bringing in a character named Dokken, who is Logan's biological son, who was born while Logan was in Japan, which the Wolverine set up.
Yeah.
Logan ended the film in Japan with a woman. And then Logan kind of leaves him in Japan, and Dokken grows up with Wolverine's powers and this very hateful resentment of his father for abandoning him at a young age. So you have this person who is equally matched to Wolverine, and is a huge threat to him. And that, I just think that was a much cleaner, I don't know if that was cleaner, it's a little bit messier, but you've got all the threads there. It wouldn't have taken that much to set it up. And I just thought, like, having a clone was just too clean. Like, I get that this is, like, about Logan's inner journey, and so, like, fighting himself is going to be the last big challenge for himself.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been much more interesting to come down to a battle, especially if we're talking about, and I think a lot of this film is about Logan's legacy and what he wants to leave behind.
Yeah.
And if it comes down to fighting your biological son to save your genetic daughter.
Yeah.
I think that's a much more interesting emotional setup. And,
also a way you're essentially still fighting yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'd be fighting himself in the, and the metaphor wouldn't be like quite so obvious. And then also you wouldn't have to, you know, have CGI Hugh Jackman squaring off against himself, and since he was like a mindless clone, he had absolutely no character to him. He just had Wolverine's power, and I think honestly, you know, an extra 10 minutes could have been given to Dokken's setup, and then left the same fight scenes in there, and it would have existed the same way, and I think a little bit more powerful. With the idea of family more than self,
I think you could have done more with adding the Richard E. Grant's character Xander Rice with tying that into it, because he's the son of the guy that Wolverine killed in Apocalypse. Which when he said that, I didn't remember that when they brought that up, because I don't remember that character being a big character.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, and so that's why I was like, why is this being brought up? But I think it could have been an interesting, where like Richard E. Grant acts more of a father figure to Logan's son than Logan did or whatever. If you delve into that.
Yeah, and then you have this also this contrast of in the end, Logan chooses, or either Logan or Laura. I mean, if you keep it like it is, Laura is the one who kills him, but this genetically engineered, not necessarily natural future of mutants killing like the lat. If that would make Dokken like the youngest natural mutant,
Yeah.
And so if you have this genetically engineered mutant killing the last natural mutant in who has turned bad in the hopes that there is a bright, innocent future for all these genetically engineered mutants, I think it works on a lot of levels. You know, maybe it's too maybe it's too nerdy, and if they brought up, you know, maybe not enough people saw the Wolverine, so if this Japanese version of Hugh Jackman showed up, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be Hugh Jackman, but this, you know, they'd cast a Japanese actor who bore some kind of resemblance to Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
He shows up with claws, and they go, oh, that's his son. He was born in Japan, and, you know, maybe half the audience would go, when did Japan get involved in this? But, I think it could have been really interesting to do that. It's not, obviously, it doesn't affect my opinion of the film much, because we've been gushing over it.
Yeah.
But,
Now, do you think... Because the way it seems with the Wolverine trilogy, because I know people want to forget Origins, but you kind of can't. Even though it's kind of been erased, but kind of, I don't know. Do you think it hurt them because it feels like they never really, doesn't matter they made them all stand alone each film or tried to. Do you think it hurts the overall trilogy because they do that? Because they kind of miss, they could miss threads like this in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely don't have an eye for, I mean, that's one of the major things Fox is missing in general is Kevin Feige's eye for weaving plot lines throughout films.
Yeah.
That, you know, if it's kind of obvious, like when we walked out of the movie theater with our group, we were like, oh, so where do you think this fits on the X-Men timeline, and we're like, I have no idea what timeline we're in. It's been rebooted and time traveled and changed so many times that those movies, they exist as a series, but you don't necessarily think of them as like a single plot line anymore.
Yeah.
I think they've definitely kept Wolverine's emotional journey intact throughout, but yeah, I do think they kind of missed off on, and I'm sure, I'm positive that when they did the Wolverine and left him in Japan, someone said, oh, we can bring Dokken in the next film. And I'm sure I would wager money that Dokken was even brought up in the Wolverine clone character at some point during the script writing stage. It's just too close to not have considered it. But yeah.
The next question, because I think the person they're trying to set up to be that Kevin Feige character person is Simon Kinberg. And I know how you feel about him in certain ways, so I want to ask your opinion on that. How much of a role do you think he's playing? Because he didn't produce any of the Wolverine movies before this. This is the first one he produced or helped produce. And then he also did Deadpool and Fantastic Four, X-Men Days of Future Past, and X-Men First Class, and X-Men Apocalypse, sorry. So since First Class, he's kind of done all of them except Wolverine.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret I'm not like entirely stoked on Simon Kinberg just as a writer.
Yeah.
He's worked on most of the stinkers of Fox's Marvel films. And he kind of gets away with it unscathed. As we've talked about in the tranking incident of Fantastic Four, everyone else who worked on that film got out without a scratch. I would say I'm much more confident in Lauren Shuler Donner as their guiding voice. Uh-huh. She's been with X-Men since the beginning and has been attached to all their projects, and including being on... the current show Legion, and also being attached as a producer for the TV shows they have coming up. I don't know, I'm not involved in the films enough to know who's there for quality control, but you know, it's done pretty well. I did not like Apocalypse in any way whatsoever, but I think that's more of a problem with Bryan Singer at this point. But obviously they don't have that vocal through line of Feige, and even with Legion, as much as I'm enjoying Legion, it's not tied to any of the films in any way.
Yeah.
At least not at this point. They haven't given us any clues that that's happening. So So they don't. Yeah, there's not that strong voice of quality control and of plot weaving that Feige has. But I don't know. We could see. I do think they'd benefit from a TV showrunner, which is what, you know, Marvel has done so well. We've talked about involving TV showrunners to maintain all your films, as they've done with both of their two previous, like, universe
with Whedon
managers.
And, with Whedon and then with
the Russo brothers.
Yeah. And so the next question I have is, where do you see Fox's Marvel genre going now? Because you have Deadpool 2, you have New Mutants possibly, which has been talked about. I think there's been some other rumored projects. Of course, there's the ever gestating Gambit.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much dead. from everything I've heard, it's
because they still don't have a director.
No, and I'm pretty sure Channing Tatum's kind of backed out at this point too.
But the let me see. I'm trying to find something on that. Ken Berg this past month stated that X-23, Alpha Flight, and the Exiles are in development stages. And so what, I don't know any of the, X-23 is the character we just saw, his daughter.
That's Lara.
But I don't know about who Alpha Flight and the Exiles are.
Alpha Flight is like Canadian. I have, Alpha Flight is like a team of Canadians. They're like the Canadian Avengers. I don't know a lot of Alpha Flight. I know a couple of them who have like tied over to X-Men, like North Star. I think they're digging around in their X-Men tie-in franchises.
Because
I know one I've heard kicked around that they still have the rights for is Silver Surfer. Which could be, I'm not a huge Silver Surfer fan. It gets a little too weird for me, like Silver Surfer and Galactus. But I don't know, I guess they could do it well. I don't think they'll touch Fantastic Four for a while. I think they're going to sit on it until the dust settles from that last one.
Well, the question is, if they do that, then wouldn't that revert back to Marvel? Like, how long do they have before that
happens? I think it's like 10 years. It's a while before it reverts back.
I just realized.
I don't think they'll sit on it that long. I think they'll. I mean, there's definitely people right now at Fox trying to figure out what to do with Fantastic Four, but I think they know anything they do for a while is going to be ridiculed.
And I just realized that Laura Shula Donner was not on Fantastic Four at all.
Well, there you go. Yeah, she was at Fox and just came on for like the first X-Men, and it's just stuck through the X-Men franchise for everything X-Men related, including Deadpool. And is on Deadpool 2. I've had a professor who's close friends with her and had nothing but great things to say about her. So I think she might be, hopefully, their guiding light. But I don't know what she was doing when Apocalypse was coming. I think they just gave Singer, free rein on Apocalypse, and he needs to step aside.
Yeah, and Apocalypse was just nothing really connected. It just felt, I can't remember if it was you that brought it up, because I think you saw an article about like how sometimes enough is enough with like trying to save the world. And I think even Hunter brought this up in our article on Medium about like favorite non-MCU movies. When he talked about Logan, he talked about how what was so great about Logan was that it was like a contained story. It wasn't the save the world plot line.
And that's what I really liked. I think Days of Future Past was so good because, and I know some people who I remember seeing like a Facebook status that was like, oh man, I can't believe I just paid to see that movie in theaters. All they did was talk the whole time. But like, that's what I love about X-Men movies is the politics of it is so interesting. And you have so many different people with so many different emotional motivations going on. And that's what Days of Future Past was not about, saving the world. Days of Future Past was about changing one person's mind, going back to make sure one person didn't end up being a giant mutant racist.
Yeah.
And like the climax was big and it was CGI, but it came down to like not who can you punch the hardest, but like can you talk Charles or can you talk Eric into seeing what he's doing as a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then and that I think superhero movies have evolved past you know, that big last finale, which is just punch, punch, punch.
Yeah.
And then it felt like Apocalypse just completely forgot about that. I think Apocalypse would have been a perfectly fine superhero movie in like 2008.
Yeah.
But I think we've just learned to want more out of our films than like mind control and then a bunch of giant destruction at the end.
Yeah, and that was the thing with First Class and Days of Future Past, I think, was that it focused, especially First Class, it focused more heavily on the relationships of the characters. It went more in depth with Charles and Eric's relationship. And then also, I think someone read about how it went into Hank and Mystique's mm-hmm. relationship as well. And it continued in the Days of Future Past how essentially Charles is trying to make sure his sister, is how he views her, doesn't do something stupid. And then also make sure his best friend doesn't do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to Apocalypse, it's more like, okay, let's save the world. And there's a little bit of that still there. And I think that's probably the stronger moments, especially with Fassbender as Eric, mm-hmm. Or as Magneto. But you didn't know who to follow. And it felt like Apocalypse was there to set up Sophie Turner as Jean Grey and these other characters that I don't know. I don't know if we'll see another X-Men movie in that series. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. And it was just this huge misstep. You're right. I think it had a very good setup for Magneto, even though we've seen like that same storyline before of like, Magneto's trying to be a good guy, but the humans won't let him, but they did it well this time. And then they brainwashed him. Like you gave him the motivation to hate humans, but then you needed somebody to come in and brainwash him again. And then we have to break the brainwashing.
Yeah.
It's just, I really did not care for it. I know people who were like, oh yeah, it was like middle of the road superhero movie, but like, no. I just did not care for it at all.
So you're back to what I was saying, what other, so you think Silver Surfer will be kind of a future thing they'll talk about, Fantastic Four, where do you see them going down the X-Men road again after Apocalypse, or do you see them stopping and going elsewhere?
Oh yeah, I mean they're definitely continuing in the Sophie Turner, Ty Sheridan, that class. We have not seen the last of them.
Yeah.
I don't know that the first class will be back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the new group of kids they set up in this last one will most definitely be back soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I think Jennifer Lawrence and all of them said that the only way to get them all back is if they get them all back. Like, they have to all, McAvoy, Fassbender, and Lawrence all have to agree to it.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm surprised they got them for Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I mean, don't think they'll do it again.
Because they got, I mean, let's see, I'm reading right now that Sophie Turner said production on the next film would begin soon, and that was this month. We shall see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't think Gambit will happen, is what you're saying?
I mean, yeah, at least not in the current. I highly doubt we'll ever see a Channing Tatum Gambit, and I think it might happen at some point, but not in this current, you know, planning that it's in. I think it's just dead.
At one point, Tatum, I don't know if has officially dropped. That was announced at one point when they said no, that was just a rumor that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Rupert Wyatt was the original director. He dropped out, and then Doug Liman was supposed to direct the movie, and then he dropped out last year. And Simon Kinberg, because he makes all the news, all the announcements, said that filming for Gambit will start in early 2018, to start its own franchise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kept, but the like the news with Channing Tatum was like, okay, he's waiting to get ready to go. Oh, now he just took this other role. Oh, yeah. Now he's waiting. Oh, now he just took this other role. I mean, he's an in-demand actor. And,
he is, yeah.
And the more and more I think they keep stalling him, the more and more you read interviews with him that he sounds less and less enthusiastic.
Yeah.
So, which is fine by me. I like Channing Tatum, but he's not Gambit. So, it's fine by me if they have to restart.
Do you see Gambit fitting into an R-rated comic book movie, or do you see that being PG?
100%. One of my favorite, like, Gambit, like, solo runs, where it's just, like two or three issues that form this, like, close-ended story, uh-huh. is that, this guy who's, like, because Gambit and Rogue are, like, a famous couple.
Yeah.
This guy literally gets Gambit on a sex tape with another woman and mails it to Rogue, and Gambit, like, goes to Xavier's school, but he's not allowed, he's kind of, Charles sometimes likes him, sometimes doesn't. He's similar to Deadpool, and he has to like talk this student into like breaking into Rogue's room and stealing the sex tape for him, so she won't see him like having sex with another woman. I mean, that's you know, kind of Gambit storyline, and he's involved deeply in like the underground of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
So I think, yeah, I mean, he's one of those that doesn't necessarily need gore for his like superpower. Like, uh-huh. I don't need to see a, that's not even the point of his superpower. He can, you know, put kinetic energy into anything, and so he can make it like a bullet, but instead of, like, passing through a person when he throws it at them, it just transfers all the kinetic energy to them. So a playing card, he can throw at somebody, and it'll knock them back, like, with the power of a bullet. So I don't need to see a playing card pass through somebody's head. But I mean, it would be interesting to see the New Orleans underground,
yeah,
be explored in a grittier way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's very close to Deadpool in terms of sarcasticness and inappropriate behavior and all that sort of thing. So I'd be open to an R-rated one.
And then the next thing, or a few more questions. So Jackman's saying that Logan is his last movie, and even though Ryan Reynolds and many people are trying to get him in a Deadpool sequel, he said no.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever, if this ever happens, and somehow Fox and Marvel make a deal, do you ever see Jackman playing Wolverine in the MCU?
Yeah, he said he would. He said he said that's the only way he's coming back is if he gets to be up there with the full team. So,
and yeah. do you see that as a possibility?
No. I see Fox possibly brokering like a Sony type deal with Spider-Man for Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
I could see them doing that, but they've been doing X-Men for so long successfully that I don't think they'd ever give that up.
Even if it's just for that character. I don't know if that, I mean, I don't know.
No, the way that Fox has operated, I think they'd rather have Wolverine go out on their terms than relinquish creative control to somebody else.
Fair enough. And then Patrick Stewart also, or two things. He said that he was retiring the role of Charles Xavier, and then he would not play it again. But it's also, he also said in the same month that he could see himself returning for a Deadpool movie or the Legion TV series.
Hmm.
Do you see that ever happening?
That'd be interesting. I mean, there's definitely a huge storyline the last couple of years for the Uncanny Avengers, which are... what are they? Their current... I mean, who are the people you know? Quicksilver, Deadpool, Cable, Rogue. Mm-hmm. It's mostly X-Men, and then... Captain America leads it.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually brought together because after Charles had died, the Red Skull dug up his body and implanted Charles's brain into his own, so he has all of Charles's psychic powers.
Okay,
which is obviously a huge problem because Charles is an extremely powerful psychic, and can just kill people with his mind. So they've been, I mean, the Uncanny Avengers have been around for 4 or 5 years. And that's like their main goal is to find the Red Skull. And they've just now done it recently. But that's like a huge plot line for them. So, I mean, that might be something interesting to just do like a little Charles cameo to set up the Red Skull. I mean, they wouldn't have Red Skull, but some villain could get Charles's brain. And so that could be something that, Deadpool and Cable tackle.
And so do you think Deadpool is kind of now the center of Fox's universe where they'll be basically trying to branch off of that franchise, or do you still see X-Men being their go-to?
I mean, I think X-Men is still kind of the go-to because Deadpool is already like a branch off of the X-Men. And also, I think you want your go-to to be more audience-friendly than Deadpool. You know, I don't think you want to base your entire, no matter how well the R-rated ones do, I don't think you want to base your entire franchise around an R-rated series. So yeah, I think Deadpool, with Deadpool and X-Force coming up, he's definitely going to be a huge part, but I think they'll still stick to the X-Men as their center.
Yeah, because I think they heard they want to do a Deadpool 3 and then another, and then an X-Force movie. So essentially two more movies after this one. I mean, do you see Ryan Reynolds? He can't do it as long, but do you see, because he started older, do you see Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool as long as, say, Jackman did with Wolverine?
Well, yeah, I mean, also, you don't have to worry about Ryan Reynolds aging because he wears a huge amount of makeup. So,
yeah,
I can see him sticking around for a long time.
And then the last question is, who do you think will play? Who do you think should play Cable in Deadpool 2?
I love the, like, one of the last ones I heard was Kyle Chandler, and I'd be 100% on board with that. I'm pretty anti Stephen Lang. A lot of people, a lot of people were pushing for that one, but I think it's the same people who are pushing for Ronda Rousey for Captain Marvel, and it's like just because. Just because somebody looks like a character doesn't mean that they have the chops to play them. And the thing with Cable is just because Stephen Lang can play a badass doesn't mean, like, just playing a badass doesn't mean you can be a comic straight man.
Fair point.
That's what you have to do with Cable. Cable is the foil to Deadpool. So yeah, I like the idea of Kyle Chandler. There was like a weird hint in the Deadpool teaser that maybe Nathan Fillion, because they had
Firefly.
Yeah, they, and there's some graffiti that say Nathan Summers is coming, which is Nathan Summers as Cable. And then the next cut, there's all these posters of Firefly.
Yeah.
I don't know about that because Nathan Fillion is supposedly in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So, I mean, you could split both universes. People have done it, but Chris Evans did it, but I don't know if they'd do it so close to each other. I would love Liam Neeson. Because I think he's got the look. And Liam Neeson was in the like funniest 5 minutes to ever be on television ever, which is his scene with Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant from Life's Too Short. That I think that is one of the most brilliant pieces of comedy that's ever been written or performed. And so
I
like,
wanna
he's
do
got
comedy.
He's got the chops. Like, if you haven't seen that,
oh, it's great.
Look it up. That's one of the funniest just clips of a TV show I think that's ever been made. But
I think at one point, I don't know how it was a rumor or it was like talked about. I can't remember where I read it, that Russell Crowe was someone people talked about.
I don't really see the look there, but I don't know, maybe. I mean, he's got the comic timing, but
he might be too busy with the Universal Monster franchise where he's playing Jekyll
that
and
too.
Hyde.
That too. Yeah, I mean, there is, you do kind of need to nail the look. And one I would have absolutely loved that got picked up by the internet rumor mill was John Hamm, but he's explicitly stated he never wants to do a superhero movie. But he's also, you know, his career is not going super well. Sorry, John, if you're listening, I love you. But you know, maybe he's changed his mind these days.
He hasn't become that breakout star after Mad Men, if that, like leading man in movies, if that makes
sense. Yeah, But I think what we have found after Madman is that he's a incredibly talented comic actor.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think he'd be incredible in that role.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of good options, none of them being Stephen Lang. So give it up.
Okay.
Give it up, internet.
So for this, that's the end of our Logan episode. So any final thoughts on Logan before we end it?
No, I'm very happy with it. I had my doubts.
Yeah.
Right after Deadpool came out and everybody and Fox was like, we're going to make more R-rated superhero films. I was like, oh, no, you guys took the wrong lesson from this. But they did it well. They did it well.
If you have a strong vision behind it and if it fits the character, it works very
and it
well.
It definitely fits the character. And, you know, I've heard several people talk about how violent it is, but it doesn't feel unnecessary here because in Hugh Jackman's performance, he feels the weight of every person that he hurts.
Yeah.
And so it kind of is necessary to see the way that he's real. They've so much of Wolverine's character for so long has been how much he regrets all the violence that surrounds him. So to finally get to really experience that violence, I think helps put you in his head.
And he even says that in this movie as well, when he's talking to Lara, when he talks about killing people or asks her about killing people, and she goes, well, I killed all bad ones or whatever. And he's like, it's the same. Mm-hmm. Like, in his eyes, killing a bad one or an innocent person hurts the same more because you're taking a life.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think it was a great send-off for the character. And, I mean... This is a question that was brought up after we walked out of the theater from our buddy Dan. Do you see Logan being that movie that kind of breaks the barrier and being nominated for Best Picture next year at the Oscars? I know it's a long way away, so we don't know what's coming out. But do you?
Yeah, I mean that's the key thing. I think was it was released in March. Like nothing released in March ever gets nominated for the Oscars. Like no matter what.
Well,
so
very rarely. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean people will have forgotten about Logan by the time the Oscars start up.
Now, granted, Deadpool was released in February and was in the running. It didn't get it, but it was in the running.
Yeah, it was just in the running to get internet nerds excited about the Oscars, which didn't work because nobody watched them anyway.
Shots fired. But you never know. We'll see. But that was the same thing when we got on to Dan for saying that. He's like, that wasn't my opinion. I was just saying that's what people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it's an excellently crafted film, and I thought it's probably the best Hugh Jackman performance I've ever seen.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think that's because the character's so important to him. And that's something that people must not forget is that he stuck with this character for 17 years
mm-hmm.
and even talked about going longer. But he actually said that it was a conversation he had with Jerry Seinfeld where Seinfeld was talking about his show and how he went out with Seinfeld when it was the number one show. And he didn't mm-hmm. want to keep going for years and see like the quality dwindle. He wanted to go out on his own terms. And that's essentially what Jackman did with Logan as well. So that's our Logan episode. So Thomas, recommendations for this week, recommendations for this week.
Legion. it's not for everybody. Yeah. I'll just say it real quick. I absolutely love it. It's an X-Men series on FX. I automatically love anything that comes on FX unless it's a property created by Ryan Murphy, in which I'm pretty skeptical of it. But yeah, it's Noah Hawley, who's the showrunner on Fargo, which is also an incredible series. And it's a superhero. It's in the same way that Logan is so much more than a superhero movie. This is so much more than a superhero TV show. It's actually like very little to do with superpowers and more to do with a young man who is schizophrenic dealing with his mental issues mm-hmm. and the possibility that they might be caused by a mutation. But it's weird, it's funny, it's stylish. Like I have no idea what decade it takes place in. it's like all over the place visually, it's all over the place story-wise. It's going to ask all these questions and slowly painfully answer a few of them. But if you just strap in, it's an entirely fun and engaging watch. and Dan Stevens is amazing. The entire cast is great. I love Jean Smart. I'm so happy to see her back from Fargo.
Oh yeah.
Another character from Fargo season 2. I can't remember the actress's name right now, but she played Jean Smart's granddaughter in Fargo season 2, and she's back as the love interest in this one, and she's great. Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah,
it's just an incredibly well-crafted show to the point that it's so artfully, interestingly crafted that you're like, can this really be a Marvel show? Like, really? But I absolutely love it. Episode 4 is coming out this week, and I can't wait.
Episode 5, you mean? Or
yeah, episode 5. Yeah, episode 4 came out last week. It was very good. Episode 3 is still my favorite, but
as you're listening to this, episode 6 is coming out this week.
Just watch it.
Dan Stevens, who's about to be big after Beauty and the Beast when it comes out, because he's playing Beast.
Yeah. He's the guy's got a lot of range. People who are that good looking shouldn't have that much range as an actor, but he does. He does.
He was in Downton Abbey. It was like his kind of first big thing.
And then he had just like some really he takes really interesting projects. He did that horror film, The Guest.
The Guest, yeah.
And then he had a guest role on High Maintenance, even back before it was on HBO, back when it was just a Vimeo series. He asked to come on High Maintenance, played this like cross-dressing house dad. He's great. That's one of my favorite episodes. This is his little episode. And then he came back for the HBO series. But he's a really ambitious guy.
Yeah.
Extremely talented. I'm sure Beauty and the Beast will open him up to audiences, but Legion should be what you're watching him in because he's incredible.
Yeah. But and then my recommendation this week is actually another podcast. I don't want to take all of our listeners away with this one. But it's a podcast called You Must Remember This. Have you listened to it at all?
Yeah, I listened to it a while ago. I haven't kept up with it, but I liked it a lot.
I caught it and I downloaded it all, and then like it was kind of funny because our friend Jamie had sent it to me after I downloaded like 20 episodes, and I was like, I guess I need to listen to this. I'm just kind of skipping around because it's goes over like a variety of topics. There's one season that goes into if you like classic Hollywood and old Hollywood and even up to the 70s, this is kind of a good podcast for you, especially the history of it and the backstories, because it doesn't shy away from the darker stuff. So like I've been listening to one season did like the MGM story, and it kind of go like focused on like major characters and the rise and fall of MGM in the classic Hollywood era. And then I think I haven't listened to this season, but there's one season on like Charles Manson and the Charles Manson's Hollywood and the murders that happened. And then one season's about World War II and the Hollywood lives that people had during the war. A lot of great stuff. I've listened to like 7 or 8 episodes in the past like 2 days. So it's a good show to listen to, especially if you like I think you and me both do, this old Hollywood history. Mm-hmm. But that's our show. Make sure you follow us on on Twitter at Cinemation Show. Like us on Facebook. Make sure you follow us on Medium. Thomas is putting out a lot of good stuff on Medium right now, as a lot of people are. Thomas just did a review on the Belko experiment.
Yeah, it's kind of like a review on the Belko experiment mixed with a retrospective on James Gunn's career.
And then hopefully he'll have a good article about food coming up soon. Are you going to do that one?
I still need people's suggestions on that one, but
it'll be great. If you want to be a writer for Medium, feel free to contact us. I've been reading a couple people's submissions recently, and we're looking for more writers. And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and write us a review and rating. That's really important. It helps us out and it helps get the word out about the show. So Thomas, thank you for coming on. Hopefully this makes up for missing Deadpool last year.
Yeah, man. Yeah, a little bit.
We're halfway there. And guys, thank you guys for listening. Hope you listen to more episodes soon. Bye.